Traditional wedding vows talk about for better or for worse, in sickness and in health. And when your wife has Alzheimer's disease and you are her caregiver, you learn what those words truly mean. Even more so when she's one of the more than 200,000 Americans with early onset Alzheimer's. That's when dementia symptoms happen before age 65. Jim Manji and his wife Kathleen have been married for 44 years. For the past 9 years, Jim was Kathleen's primary caregiver as her Alzheimer's dementia progressed. Today, she lives in a memory care unit, and he hopes sharing their story will help other caregivers. Jim Manji, welcome to Stateside.
It is a pleasure to be here.
And we also want to welcome Jim and Kathleen's daughter, Charlene Manji. We want to thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Jim, tell us about Kathleen before Alzheimer's. What was she like?
She has always, and even to this day, has been a cheerful person with a smile that just lights up the room. That's one of the many reasons that I fell in love with her a long time ago. But in addition to that, she is a scientist. She spent a good deal of her career as a scientist for the Federal Department of Energy, where she did things like helping to clean up nuclear waste. She got awards from the Secretary of Energy for work like that and for programs for compensating the workers in the Manhattan Project who were poisoned by some of the work they did during that. She felt very strongly about reaching out to these workers who were now dispersed all over the country, tracking them down and getting them the compensation that they deserved belatedly.
When and how did things begin to change?
About 9, 10 years ago, both Charlene and I noticed that her memory just didn't seem as sharp as it used to be, and she didn't organize things as well as she used to. She used to be a highly organized person, and it was no one thing. It was a gradual process, so we couldn't say that on a particular day it began.
And how old was she when you first started noticing these things, Charlene? How old was Mom?
56?
Mid-50s.
Right?
Mid-50s.
And at the time, I was living in California. Mm-hmm. I lived there for many years before moving here to Michigan. So most of my contact with my parents was over the phone. And so the way I kind of noticed this was I would have a phone call with my mom and talk about, you know, whatever was going on. And then the next week, I would talk to her, and she would have almost no recollection of what we had talked about just the week prior. Sometimes it was little things, and sometimes it was things that seemed actually were pretty important. And at first, it almost kind of hurt my feelings. I felt like she wasn't remembering important things. But then I started to realize a pattern that she was paying attention, but she was not remembering.
It wasn't sticking.
A lot of our conversations, mm-hmm. which was really strange that no one would have ever described her as a particularly forgetful person up until this point.
And I know that you're a school psychologist, mm-hmm. so you have training. Did you get a sense? Who got the sense first that this is something beyond overtired? Oh, you're pointing at your daughter. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. At the time when things were really starting to get worse, I was in grad school for psychology. And my husband's also a psychologist. So between the two of us,
alarm bells.
Yeah. When we would interact with my mom, it became more and more clear this was not normal. That things were getting worse. She was not remembering things that she certainly would have remembered a couple years ago. And even in conversation, just sometimes just wasn't really making sense.
So did you broach this with your dad?
I did.
Tough conversation.
Yes.
What'd you say?
Absolutely. Gosh, I can remember it pretty clearly. It was over the phone. I was in California. I think I started to cry during the phone call and say, "Dad, I'm really worried. Something seems wrong with Mom. She's not remembering things. She keeps forgetting conversations that we have." And I know he agreed that he had seen mm-hmm. some similar things. And I think both kind of hopefully and also just kind of seeing things differently day to day as opposed to coming in and out with conversations, he kind of his first thought wasn't Alzheimer's. It was, you know, maybe there's some mental health stuff, some depression, or maybe there's, you know, a vitamin deficiency or something like that. Whereas, to be honest, it was one of my first thoughts that I wonder if this is some kind of early onset dementia. We had conversations like that for a while, I think. And then when we tried to bring it up to my mom, that was
what happened, Jim?
Really
I'm seeing
hard.
You just you did a look here. What was that like bringing it up?
It was one of the saddest encounters I ever had with her. When I broached that term with her. Actually, I don't think I even mentioned Alzheimer's. I simply said to her, we should go to a doctor and have them examine you about your memory because you seem to be having some difficulty with memory. And that instantly became, in her terminology, you are accusing me of being senile. And that was one of the worst spats we've ever had in 40-odd years of marriage. And as you said, yes, we've been married for 44 years. If you ask my wife in better days, her answer always would be far too long. But I was not able at that time to get her to go to a neurologist at that time. We did some other counselors, and she fired half a dozen counselors because they couldn't do anything for her. They knew they couldn't do anything for her because it wasn't a matter of counseling. So we didn't get an official diagnosis of Alzheimer's for quite some years, although by the time we got it officially, both Charlene and I
obvious.
Knew.
The ship had truly sailed.
And
yes.
I think the thing that was really hard, and I imagine is hard for most anyone with this disease, is I think at that stage when the disease was really just starting to emerge and impact her, I mean, a core part of my mom's identity was her intellect. She's just such an intelligent person, as my dad said, a scientist, and just she was funny, but kind of in a sarcastic, like, you know, super clever kind of way. That's just who she is. I think to her, the idea of losing some of that is just terrifying, truly terrifying.
Knowing there was no way back, there's right. nothing anybody can give you to make this
right.
go away.
Right.
And I know that you and your husband moved here to Michigan, mm-hmm. and you've been living, Jim, with Kathleen in Virginia,
mm-hmm.
but decided, let's all pull together.
Yes.
So you moved here to Michigan.
And that was really Charlene's idea, and I completely agreed with it as soon as the idea was on the table.
But you were her primary caregiver for?
For about 6 years.
What is that like day in, day out?
These, especially the last 6 years or so, have been the most terrible years of my life and at the same time the most meaningful.
You used the term in talking with our producer, Allie, I think you called it an awful act of love. It's very, very
yes.
telling choice of words.
Yes, because as you said at the outset, there was something about for better or for worse. And my wife and I have had at least our fair share of better. And now it's time for the other. And I did take care of her 24/7 for all those years. Now, I did that personally alone, but I had a lot of support, not just from Charlene, but also from other people, especially from things like the Alzheimer's mm-hmm. Association. Absolutely invaluable in terms of the resources that they make available. They have a 24/7 volunteer hotline. They have a virtual library. The Alzheimer's Association also has, and this I found very valuable, essentially an online support group. And it people from all over the country participate in it. And I have gotten some very, very good advice. For example,
yes.
I went out to the message board and I said, look, I'm having trouble because my wife keeps asking for her mommy. And her mother has passed away 25 years ago. And I keep telling her that, but it's not sticking, and she keeps asking. And the people on the message board, several people, very, very nicely told me I was doing it all wrong. They told me in nice terms, "You jerk, you're telling the truth.
Don't do that.
You, right? Don't do that." And I would like to tell you that in 44 years, I have never lied to my wife. Well, hardly ever.
Yeah.
But I was taught you have to lovingly lie. And it is true that her mother passed away. But when my wife was asking, she was asking from her 8-year-old persona. In her mind, she's 8 years old. So her mommy ought to be in the next room.
And that got you through that moment. Mm-hmm. You learned something fascinating about mirrors.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Later on, as the disease progressed, Kathleen encountered a pattern that is not universal, but many Alzheimer's victims get confused by reflections. They no longer understand the concept of reflection. I heard her one day in the bathroom yelling, "Go away." She was yelling at that old lady. And after that, she wouldn't go into that bathroom because there was an old lady there. So I had to cover up or take down every mirror in the house. I even had to cover some of our large artwork where the glass would reflect. Charlene had to do the same thing with the mirrors in her house when Mom would come over for a visit. Alzheimer's is not just about forgetting, although that is one of the things that you noticed earlier. It's also about time. Time is different. My wife can be simultaneously in her mind an 8-year-old child, and in the very next sentence, the grandmother of the 9-month-old infant. And that causes her no problem, no cognitive dissonance.
But for you who love her, and I'm thinking, you know, as a daughter, Charlene, we assume we're going to have some certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Is there a sense of anger at who or what? Or feeling cheated?
Yeah, I'd say cheated, I guess. I don't know if I feel angry. I went to therapy for a little while when things with my mom started to become really clear what was going on to me. And I think part of it is, I mean, to be honest, when I was younger, when I was a teenager, my mom and I didn't have a great relationship. Like many
mothers
teenagers and moms, we, you know.
Headbutting time.
We headbutt a lot. And I think we're both fairly stubborn, kind of intense people. And so, you know, we struggled a little bit. But I guess in my mind, I guess I kind of always pictured at some point we'd have like a different kind of adult relationship. Maybe we'd talk through stuff in the past or maybe we wouldn't, but
it would shift gears.
Yeah, I just pictured, I don't know, talking about books or talking about marriage or talking about, you know, raising kids or motherhood. And I think when I realized that that relationship was not going to happen, that was painful. And I think, there's been some of those key life moments, like my wedding or the birth of my baby, where, you know, my mom was there.
But not there.
But not there. And that's been hard. Especially now as a new mom, there's definitely been moments when I have wished I could really talk to my mom about, well, what was it like with me? Or what do you think I should do? And, you know, she just can't give me that. It's not her fault.
How long since she's known who you are?
I gotta say, I think years. It comes in and out. She has a sister. She had a sister, younger sister, who was a good deal younger than her. And she had kind of a maternal relationship with that sister, Joan. So I think I have been Joan for quite a while. I think actually my baby has been her nephew sometimes. So There's been moments when she's kind of had almost a maternal relationship with me, but I don't think that she realizes I'm her daughter. I think sometimes she thinks I'm her younger sister.
And Jim, does she know you are her husband, or is that slipped away?
Not clearly. She knows that she knows me. Mm-hmm. And at the memory center now, she's happy to see me. But it's not clear to me that she has a clear understanding of quite who I am.
And you say memory center because I know you recently made the decision that it was time. How did you know it was time to move her out and into the memory center?
Through the mediation of the Alzheimer's Association, I got a lot of input. And the universal advice was there is no one moment, but you will know the time.
How did you know?
Among other things, I had a trip to the emergency room myself. I thought it might have been a small stroke or something like that for me.
A lot of stress.
Stress had something to do with it, yes, indeed. And there's my wife, you know, there in the house, and she's basically helpless to help me. And I'm thinking, you know, if something happens to me, the ambulance who took me, the local ambulance, Huron Valley, they're terrific. They were very respectful to my wife in recognizing that they needed to take care of her, too. So that worked out okay, but that was one signal to tell me that I needed to get professional help for my wife. And we arranged it, and I have to admit that I did use some considerable trickery. She was getting reluctant to leave the house, which was another trigger. She was getting agoraphobic, and that's bad to have them be completely isolated and away from any other social contact except for me.
And bad for you to be also completely isolated.
So, what I did with some planning with the memory center is that morning I switched off the furnace and let the house cool down a little bit and went into the bedroom and I said, "Sweetheart, I got some good news and some bad news. The bad news is the furnace is broken and it's going to take a couple of days to fix it and it's going to be very cold. But the good news is, sweetheart, I've got a place arranged for us to stay that'll keep us nice and warm." "Oh, okay." So I got her dressed, got her up, and we walked the 1,000 miles, I mean the 1,000 feet, down to the memory center. And they were expecting us, and they knew the fable I had told her. So they said, "Oh, we're sorry to hear about your furnace, but we'll keep you nice and warm here." And they took her, and telling her, "Sweetheart, I have to go back to the house and work with the furnace guys," and turning around and leaving the memory center, knowing that my wife, in all likelihood, will never leave that place, has got to be up there. Well, let me tell you this way. 50 years ago, when I was in the Army, I thought I had done the most difficult thing I'd ever have to do. I was the next of kin notification officer. I had to knock on doors and say, "Mrs. Jones, your son has been killed in Vietnam." The only thing I knew that was more difficult than doing that the first time was doing it the second time the same day. So for a long time, I thought that was the most difficult thing I would ever have to do. I was wrong.
You'd hit the depths and you were wrong.
I was wrong.
It was walking that 1,000 feet. And yet you can be with her and you can see her, but it was like a finality, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And Charlene knows right from there, I drove up to her house and we went through several boxes of Kleenex that afternoon. And when I came home and walked in the house, sure enough, it was cold because I forgot to turn the furnace back on. And my wife, in better days, would have said, "It serves you right, stud muffins."
What do you want to come out of your sharing this journey with Alzheimer's, with your wife and with your mother? What do you hope will come from this? Charlene, I'll let you start.
It's a really hard disease. It takes people away, but they're still there. And that's hard to watch. It's really hard to watch your loved one fade away. I think I want people to know that although right now there is not a lot you can do for your loved one other than try and make them comfortable, you know, and try and be with them and go with them with whatever they're thinking. I want people to know that even though, you know, there's no cure for this disease, the treatments are limited, there is help out there. There are other people going through the same thing. The number grows every day, every minute. And there are ways that you can find support. I've also gotten involved in the Alzheimer's Association. I do some advocacy and fundraising through a young professional group here in town. And that, to me, has been really healing, to feel that even though I can't do a lot to help my mom directly, I can maybe help the next generation dealing with this disease. So I would just encourage people to not feel like you're alone, to not feel, I think people feel almost a sense of shame or embarrassment or something around this disease. And it's nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed of. It's nothing anyone can do about. We don't know what causes it. And all we can do is try and support each other and try and help our loved ones the best we can.
Jim, what do you want to say?
I agree completely with my daughter, which is always a good thing for a dad to do. It's a disease. It's not a disgrace. We don't yet understand the disease, and we hope that people like the Alzheimer's Association are, we know that they're working towards the day when there finally is an Alzheimer's survivor, because so far there has never been one. I sincerely hope that Charlene's generation will see the first Alzheimer's survivor. But until then, we need to recognize it as a disease. We need to treat it with as much compassion as possible. And we need to reach out to our neighbors who are dealing with it. Even in the time that I've been here in Michigan, I have been touched by the kindness of strangers. One quick anecdote. We went to a play at intermission. Someone had noticed that I was shepherding my wife around, and a lady whom I'd never met before came up on my far side and whispered in my ear, "Would you like me to help your wife in the restroom?" You know, and that kind of kindness of strangers just brings tears to my eyes. And I want to do as much as I can to encourage other people to demonstrate that kindness of strangers to people who are dealing in various stages with this terrible disease until such time as we don't have to deal with it anymore.
That was Jim and Charlene Manji sharing their Alzheimer's journey. You can listen to our entire conversation by going to MichiganRadio.org.